Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Psychology of Work, Why People Do What They Do, a podcast exploring the science and stories behind high-cohesion, high-performing teams. My name is Dr. Bobbi Wegner. I'm a lecturer at Harvard in organizational psychology and the founder of Groups. In each episode, we dive into the minds of industry experts to uncover what drives team and individual dynamics, tackle real-world challenges together, and share actionable insights to help teams feel and function their best. Thanks so much for joining, and let's get started. Hi, everyone. I'm so excited to be here today. I'm here with Ginger Day Emmons, who's a chief of staff at ControlUp, where she leads strategic alignment and execution across sales, marketing, and customer success functions. With a background spanning executive communication, enablement, and content innovation, she connects vision to action while fostering collaboration across high-growth teams. As a graduate of Duquesne University with a master's in education, Ginger combines analytical rigor with a deeply human approach to leadership. She's known for cultivating trust, creating psychological safety, and bringing empathy and intuition into the fast-paced world of tech operations, proving that leading from love and softness is not only possible, but powerful. So I'm just so excited to have you here today, Ginger, on The Psychology of Work. And who are you? Like, if you want to add to this or share anything about yourself, like what would you like to add here?
Yeah, sure. Well, first, thank you so much for having me on this podcast. Excited to be here and talk a little bit about myself and the world of Ginger Day. Kind of interesting that I guess our paths crossed on LinkedIn, I'd imagine, but we kind of had similar backgrounds. So Bobbi and I connected and here I am. Let's see, a little bit of background on me. I actually started out as a teacher many moons ago, taught middle school science, high school biology, and college for a little bit as well. Just adjunct, but it was a lot of fun. Science has always kind of been my passion. Loved teaching science, specifically loved marine science. But somehow I ended up in the world of tech. I moved out of education. I got a little frustrated with the world of education, honestly, and the politics that is education, unfortunately. Moved into consulting, consulted for a while for a childcare company, so used my education background in that role, and then landed in an editor role with that company, and then I became a stay-at-home mom. So I spent many years as a stay-at-home mom, which really formed me as a human, as a person, as a mother, and I think a lot of what I learned as a stay-at-home mother has guided me in my careers since. So very, I guess, diverse background, but here I am.
So. I love it. And now you're chief of staff at ControlUp. So what does that even look like? What is ControlUp? What do you do? How do you spend your time there?
Yeah, so ControlUp is a software company. We're in the DEX market, which is digital employee experience. So it became, you know, with COVID, with everyone working from home, it kind of blew up, so to speak, that world of tech and software. So we're monitoring software. So our software is making sure that everyone's desktop, laptop is working efficiently. All the apps are working efficiently. And so they're not having to spend time submitting tickets, which if anyone works on a computer all the time, you know, like you have the whole ticket system and that can become frustrating and time consuming, not only for the employer, but the person that are the people that are fixing the tickets. So we are helping make that world much better for our users. As chief of staff, I'm chief of staff for our go-to-market team. And my role is varied. Like I do just a lot of stuff, a lot of communications. I work specifically with our CRO and then kind of indirectly with our CMO. So sales and marketing together, revenue ops, enablement, a little bit with customer success as well. It's a pretty broad role and it's fun. It's a lot of fun. I love it because I get to work with everyone across the company, which is fun, getting to know everyone. And my goal really right now, one main goal of mine, which you and I have talked about, is better collaboration and better communication it's kind of a, let's say, a area within ControlUp that we definitely need to improve upon. And so it's kind of my main strategy right now is to get that into a better place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's so normal. I think, you know, I really hadn't heard that phrasing before, like digital employee experience or like those decks or, you know, what you were saying. I was like, oh, that's interesting. We could actually fall into that category in a different way, which is like making sure employees are engaged in the right way, in a productive way, and in a digital distributed space, because it's challenging that way. But you've had such a cool background, and I think, yeah, that's where we really align. Like I teach, the classes I teach at Harvard are both in the School of Education, right? So you have your master's in education, mm-hmm. and then also in the division of continuing and an executive ed. So, but the skills are the same, just applied to different populations. And yeah. So I find it like such a value add to be able to like, to have experience in these different environments, but there's so many parallels. There's like learnings that just intersect and overlap so much, but applied in different ways. And it sounds like you're coming from that background.
Yeah. And I mean, interesting too, right? Like you're lecturing at Harvard, and my previous role before ControlUp was I was working at University of Pennsylvania in the Graduate School of Education. And in my role there, I was in faculty affairs. And it was almost similar to what I'm doing now as chief of staff, because I, again, was able to work with everyone within that school, from students, because I edited dissertations for PhD students, all the way up to the top people in the school. So, and everyone in between, the faculty, all the other employees, students, it was amazing, honestly, to be able to work with all of them, from the dean down to the students. And I loved working with the faculty there. And I did a lot with new hiring for faculty and then the tenure process, sabbatical. I mean, everything, like everything that a faculty member goes through, whatever process they have to go through in a university setting, I helped guide them through that. And my role now is also very process oriented. And I've been putting a lot of processes in place that were not previously put in place, because it was a startup company and because things moved very quickly, a lot of processes just didn't get put into place. And now we're having to do that because we're growing. So we need processes. And also attrition, right? If someone were to leave and a new person comes into that role, there needs to be a process in place so the person can step into the role and quickly do what they need to do in that role. Mm-hmm. So my brain is a little process oriented. Maybe that's the science in me, the science background. I'm not sure, but
I can see the parallels. Like I'm just thinking in so many ways, you're code switching all over the place, working with these different people and in academia. And it's like, you know, so at Harvard, I was, they were the org psych program, the industrial organizational master's in psych program is relatively new, like 5 or 6 years old. And we were one of the very first classes. Mm-hmm. And so putting this in place, and the classes are big, like 250 people. So how do you coordinate all this? How does this, what does this even look like as we're building this from the ground up? And then also I'm in startup, right? Which is moving, same thing. You got to put the sort of infrastructure in place, but the speed in which we operate is just totally different. Academia is like, just does not move at the speed which I like to move. Startup does.
Snail's pace, right? Versus like roadrunner pace. And
yeah, it's like two different poles. So you got to know yourself what you're better suited for. But I could totally see the parallels. And just listening to you, just thinking you're such like a, you know, not knowing you very well, but like structured operation, you could operationalize anything. Like both of those roles are super suited for that. Our COO, who's the head of my teaching teams too, her name is Charlotte. She's the best. But she architect by training, married a Navy SEAL, lived abroad for 10 years. So like, and then came back to Harvard and got her second master's. Mm-hmm. And she helped me write my book. And we realized we work like really well together. She's like an operational mastermind. She can just put all the pieces in place, whether it's the big classes or it's like startup. But listening to you, you're making me think that you two would have a lot to talk about, or you see the world similarly or have a similar skill set, which is incredible. Nice. Yeah. One thing that really struck me, you know, getting to know you a little bit is that, you know, you talked about sort of being in a world that often rewards speed and assertiveness and what it looks like to lead with softness. you know, and there's like a different approach, and it can actually be like chastised a little bit, right? It feels a little risky to sort of be vulnerable or soft or, you know, lean into the kind of human side of who we are or of business. So how do you think about that? How do you make that like an advantage? How do you conceptualize this in your own mind?
Yeah, it's interesting because I had been thinking to myself for months, within like the past 6 months, that my approach and style is very different than a traditional corporate woman. And it's actually because of some interactions that I've had with other women in the corporate world. And I started realizing, wow, yeah, my approach is very different. It's softer. And I was using the word soft to think about it just in my own mind. And now I'm seeing this word being used in social media and things, that it actually can be an advantage to be softer. I think my softer approach stems from, first and foremost, being a mother and having to learn to be extremely patient, having three children and being home with them, and also my history, some life experiences that have molded me into who I am now, some very unpleasant experiences, and coming out of a very unhealthy marriage and going through an almost impossible divorce, which continues to this day in a lot of ways with a custody battle. So I'm going on 7-8 years of this, and I had to learn how to be calm and stay collected. And yoga became a huge part of my life and my healing journey. And it was really through yoga that I think I became even softer as a human. Yoga for me was incredibly grounding. And anytime I feel that I'm out of sorts or reacting too quickly to things, I go back to yoga and go back to that place of being grounded. And I think that, as you said, it's a little risky to be soft in the corporate world. But I never really thought twice about it. Like, for me, I'm like, that's just who I am. It's who I am as a person. I'm very calm, very gentle, very nurturing and caring. And I've always said, well, I shouldn't say always, but since my divorce and since going through my, call it a healing journey, I decided to start living life from a place of love and always try to do everything from a place of love, including my work. And I do think that it shines through at work. When I get feedback from colleagues and teammates, they can see it in me. I wasn't sure if they could or not, but I'm realizing now that they do and that it is appreciated. So I'm grateful. Here I am. I love it. And I love this approach to life and to work. And I think it can be effective, maybe even more effective than aggression. You know, aggression can certainly get people, you know, it can get people to where they need to be. But is it the best optic along the way? Maybe not, right? Because some people don't receive that aggression very well. But I think kindness and softness is received well, probably 99% of the time. You know, people prefer that over an aggressive person.
Well, thank you so much for sharing. And I'm sorry that you had to go through that to basically have this life learning and that you're still in it. Yeah, I have a friend going through an awful divorce, and it's just like the hum in the background always, right? That's just an extra weight that you have to manage. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like for you, you've really taken that experience and used it as an opportunity to like learn, to have more awareness, more consciousness, reflect more on how you want to lead life versus just operating and reacting and getting clarity around like what actually works here. And just the way you're describing your story, I'm thinking this is like so psychological in nature, which is like that separation, sort of noticing what's going on versus just reacting to the environment. And then having the awareness that as humans, we're hardwired for connection, social by nature. So mm-hmm. the connection and relationship matters to all of us. Even the biggest jerks in the world who think that they are too tough or too strong or do whatever, we need each other because we're humans. And that's just part of being a pack animal. And right. so, you know, when you can signal belonging and safety and connection and love, you get the best out of people. And to mm-hmm. your point, aggression and that kind of thing works in the short term at times, depending on the person. You risk potentially losing them. But what we know is when you tie this to motivation, it's not what builds intrinsic motivation and best and optimization over time. So you might change the behavior in the short term because a person's scared of you, you know?
Right.
But you're
right.
not going to create an environment of psychological safety where people are willing to take risks, put big ideas on the table, to work together, to collaborate, to think big. You lose all of that, right?
Exactly.
But when you can signal sort of that belonging and that unconditional positive regard, which really comes from Carl Rogers' like humanistic psychology, like mm-hmm. that's when people change and are willing to take risks and willing to like work for a greater purpose, for an organization, for a mission.
Yes. Yeah. And you mentioned like the whole idea of responding versus reacting, right? And that was a huge part of my healing journey and learning journey post-divorce, post because of the type of marriage I was in. I had to work very, very hard to learn how to respond versus react because I was consistently in reactive mode in order to have to always defend myself. And so I worked very hard with my therapist and then my coach to learn how to stop being so reactionary and respond instead. And that is part of how I am in my current role as chief of staff. I tend to sit back and observe and listen more so than speak, honestly. And I think that can be off-putting for people as well in the beginning, right? They get the wrong impression of you. They think maybe you're snooty or you don't want to talk to them. Or I mean, I've actually have had people say to me, like they thought that I was very different originally. And their first impression of me was very different than who I actually am. But it's just my nature to sit back and listen. And I absorb it and I absorb the energy of the room and the energy of the people. And I can read people very well. And I watch the dynamics between people. And when I get to a spot where I'm like, okay, I think I have this figured out, then I'll start to be more verbal and start to give my opinions and ideas. And yeah, so it's definitely, it can be challenging to not react to things and to learn how to be more responsive. But in the end, it's, I think, a better way to be for sure.
And it gives you more control. It's actually like I was thinking when I was listening to you at first. So when I first did my Strength Finder thing, you know, and by Gallup, and like I would have assumed my top. So I just identify with what you're saying first and foremost. Like I think there's so much power in having the ability to regulate your own emotions and have the awareness that you're getting reactive. And then mm-hmm. when I break this down into steps, it's like the first thing is like, you have to have the self-awareness that you're there, that you're getting pissed off or you're getting upset or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And then you have to have the ability to like know what you need to do to not just explode. And you have to have the insight to know the explosion is not actually going to move the needle. So I think it's like actually uber strategic. So the point is, I thought my number one strength would have been like empathy or something, just as a mm-hmm. psychologist and being trained in this. It was actually strategic. I can like step back. Mm-hmm. And I think see the options, but I think that comes from training, right? Which is like, I'm starting to get upset. All right. I become hyper aware of what's happening. How do I actually want to respond? You almost like almost distance yourself from the situation at hand.
Yes.
Reflect on what I actually want here. What's the best outcome? What's right. the possibilities that what are the best pathways to that? And mm-hmm. what behaviors do I want to do to get in alignment? That's like high level. Like it takes practice, right? It's like closer,
yes.
you know, and I'm not saying necessarily for me, but like more towards like almost like self-actualization. You've got to have that self-regulation, the awareness and yeah. the ability to like, it's like mental manipulation in a good way. mm-hmm. for yourself.
Yeah. And if you're in tune with your body, which I'm very in tune with my body, you can actually feel there's physical things that are happening, right? Of course, like your heart might be pounding, or, you know, you can feel yourself physically getting upset. So for me, it was learning to recognize, okay, this is how I'm feeling physically or internally, and then telling myself to breathe, mm-hmm. to take breaths, and to calm myself down so as not to explode in some sort of reaction. I know I can say I'm probably good at it now about 90% of the time. Of course, there's still things that are going to just
we're human.
You know, like I'm still human.
I mean, that's like being emotional is part of the human experience. It means you care, right? Apathy is the opposite of like, if you don't care, you're just disconnected and there's no relationship there. But it makes me think, oh yeah, it's like people often see clinical psychology and organizational psychology is very different. But it's like these types of skills are what takes like, a fine manager or leader to like a super leader, right? And it's like having that ability to self-regulate. These are the same skills that we teach people in therapy around anxiety, stress mm-hmm. management, depression, relation. Doesn't matter. It's the same things. It's ability to have the awareness of your emotional experience, to mm-hmm. notice the signals, to respond to it in a thoughtful way, and to be in alignment with like what you're aiming for and how you're behaving in a productive way.
Exactly.
And that makes work, though, that takes like leaders. If you can do that, then you're just like an incredible leader. And then you can also like build strong relationships to keep people like around you, working with you and for you.
Yes. Yeah. And the person that I work for, our CRO, is like a master at that. So he has built incredible relationships with many of my colleagues that have followed him, you know, from company to company, because he's so good at it. And he's very good at figuring out the right people for the right roles and getting them in those roles. And he's a strong proponent of women working in the corporate world. And it's impressive to watch that and learn from that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's so important, you know, to kind of have that. It's like, I think what you're describing is both like the self-regulation. So if we look at it through a like total psychology lens, and this is one of the classes I teach, is one's motivation, what drives human behavior in the workplace. The other one's groups and culture, which is a team psychology course. Mm-hmm. So both classes, the first thing we do in like day one is really help people think about self, other, space in between. So there's you in any situation, in any kind of conversation with someone on your team. There's the other, which is the other person. And then there's an intersection. So when I used to train more psychologists, it's like you're training people to look at those responses that you were describing, those like cues our body's sending us. Mm-hmm. Ask yourself, is this like how I'm feeling, or am I picking up on something from the other person?
Right.
You know, sort of that awareness for the self. The other is like, what's the other person bringing? Mm-hmm. And then what are the shared goals here? What does this person need? What do I need? And how do I make the implicit explicit and just talk about it? And now you're just like negotiating needs.
Yeah.
So I could see how you're describing your CRO. Like if he too has the skill set you have, it sounds like natural that it'll also be a super builder of relationships and community and teams too.
Yes. I mean, in the end, I feel like it is all about relationships, right?
Totally.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, people that get along better and can work collaboratively and communicate effectively, right? All those great buzzwords. It's just ultimately is what's best for the team. And in order to accomplish your goals, you have to be able to do that. If people aren't collaborating or communicating, there's any sort of friction there, then it just becomes a roadblock to success.
So. Yeah. And then it's like teams are sub-optimized and it doesn't feel good for the individual and actually can impact well-being, longevity, right. health, all these other things.
Mm-hmm.
Because social connection, whether at work or in our personal life, is tied to all outcomes, business outcomes, health outcomes.
Yes.
So knowing that you operate from this lens, you know, what advice would you give to other executives who want to bring more of this perspective, more humanity and care into their leadership without losing sort of this idea of what like effectiveness really is?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing is probably to just tell themselves that it's okay. It's okay to lead differently or outside of maybe what traditionally is the norm. And that might be a hurdle for some of them to even be willing to realize that they can lead with a softer edge. I would say, though, that if you're going to lead that way, you still have to have a part of you that is strong and is willing to push back when you need to, stand up for things when you have to. So you need to still have that rough edge too, I guess. You know, it's almost like a yin and a yang, a little bit of both. And I think it's really important for any leader is that they have to be able to listen. Because if they're unwilling to listen, then they have, then they're out of touch with what is actually happening within their organization, right? I mean, I've seen some leaders that they don't want to listen to anyone else's opinions. They might be full of their ideas and their opinions, and they could all be wonderful, but not listening to your colleagues is a hindrance because a lot of people have a lot of wonderful ideas. And anywhere you work, you're surrounded with brilliant people that have incredible ideas, and you have to allow those to blossom. And by not listening, they're not going to come to fruition.
Yeah, it sounds like that some of the takeaways are one, like, I see this all the time. It's like you can have like a human approach that's tuned in and that's really rooted in like the person and the relationship and talk about hard things. I actually think you can talk about the hard things much more easily when you have the strong relationship and when you've already talked about, you've negotiated how we want the relationship to be. Strong relationships at work or elsewhere means talking about hard things and it signals mm-hmm. trust and care and a want to work well together.
Yeah. And trust is very important, right? Like I left that word out, but you have to have trust. And to lead effectively, the people that, you know, are working for you have to trust you. And I don't have anyone working directly for me, but I do feel that I've built trust with a lot of my colleagues because they do come to me with personal things. And to me, that signals that, yes, they trust me. They feel comfortable coming to me. They know that I will listen to them, that I value what they have to say, respect their opinions and their thoughts. So that's huge, right? That's another pillar of being a good leader is trust. I mean, if people don't trust you, they're not going to work hard for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because that threatens, like, and if we think about the why of that, it's like, at the end of the day, humans have a few fundamental needs. One's belonging. We want to feel connected and, you know, like we're safe in this pack. And the other one's control, right? We have to feel, at the end of the day, we need to protect ourselves to sort of stay alive, just at a very fundamental level. Mm-hmm. And the way we can do that is by feeling like we have control in some ways. So if somebody's acting in a non-trustworthy way and you can't make sense of their behaviors consistently, they then become unsafe, which then is a threat to your survival, right? Like whether it's at work or elsewhere, mm-hmm. signals to us like, I shouldn't invest here or I have to have my guard up.
Right.
And works against innovation and collaboration and all the things.
Sure. Cause I mean, you could even get to the point where you're in that like, you know, fight or flight mode, right? Which totally. Is a very unhealthy state to be in consistently. And you certainly don't want anyone at work to be in that state, right?
Oh yeah. And they are much more than we like want them to be.
Right.
Right. Work is creating so much stress and anxiety for people. Mm-hmm. And then from a business perspective, then the teams and individuals are suboptimized. So it becomes an ROI. It becomes like a bottom line issue mm-hmm. although it's sort of rooted in this like kind of health and functioning and well-being.
Yeah.
I could keep talking to you forever because this is fun and where you blend the, you just, this is your world. And I just love having this conversation. So I just appreciate you being on here, Ginger, and, you know, mm-hmm. just keep doing the work. It sounds like you're doing great things. And I just appreciate you sharing your story here with us.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure to chat with you. And yeah, I will keep doing as I'm doing and pray that it works out for the best. That's all you can do, right?
I have high hopes for you. So
oh, thank you.
Thank you so much. And yeah, we'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Take care.